Hi, I'm Tawana Nishi, and welcome to Broken Open, where we discover how pain can help you to become, how things that are supposed to break you down can break you open instead. And today, we have a little bit of an atypical show because we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of pain and trauma. We're talking about reformation and what it looks like and what it feels like when your choices are not proactive. They're just a reaction to what's happening around you. We're talking about what it looks like to survive when the things that you experience really could have and should have killed you. And that's not always pretty. But at Broken Open, we understand that healing isn't always pretty and that life isn't always pretty. And there will be some things that we discuss today that you may or may not agree with. But this show isn't for you to agree. It's just for you to bear witness and hopefully take something from someone's experience that isn't your own, because it's really easy to judge and to have opinions about things when you haven't had to walk in someone's shoes. And so today we have one of the strongest people I have yet to meet, Mr. Latif Akins, and he is here to tell us his story, really starting from childhood. So Latif, thank you for being here. Welcome to Broken Open.
Well, thank you for the flattery. I don't know if I can, my cheeks are Gatorade. I'm gonna accept the compliment. Thank you.
Please do. We're glad you're here. And thank you for being vulnerable, because I don't know that people understand that when you share your trauma, you have to relive it to some extent. And sometimes it's easier than others, just depending upon how the moment hits you, how the question hits you. And so I want you to walk us through your childhood, tell us about your parents, and kind of tell us if your childhood was ever idyllic or if from the start it was tumultuous.
All right, well, my mom and my father. My father was a guitar, like a local rapper.
Okay.
You know, he locally played guitar in a band. My mom was a hippie, and she liked the way he pulled the strings, I guess. A toxic relationship of rock and roll. Stevie Ray Vaughan was a rock and roll legend. There was a picture of me on his lap because he used to come to the house when he was in town. Like, okay. So that was my, you know, I was around them environments at an early age. I literally cannot remember when I was taught not how to snitch. Like, it was always in not to okay. be a snitch. So, like, keep what happens in the house, always in the house.
Yep.
5 years old, my pops thought my mom was cheating. So he came home and he knew he couldn't really get a rise out of her. So what he did was, oh, snap. Man. All right, my fault.
That's okay. Couldn't get a rise out of her, so.
So what he did was, he came in, he kicked the dude. Well, the dude left. He went upstairs, snatched me out the bed, and kicked me down the stairs because he knew that's how I would get at my mom. So then my mom, in turn, hit him, and then they broke up, rightfully so, you know. Then for the next 2 years, they was kidnapping me back and forth, playing hide the kid. That was fun. Mom snatched me up one time. I shit on myself. I'm still embarrassed about that to this day. Mom snatched me up. She's supposed to do that because, you know, he won't. Oh, can I curse up here? I forgot to ask.
It's okay.
Yeah, because I'm from 757. Ain't nothing but a bunch of military sailors. You know, we just grow up. First word, I got smacked in my butt. I said, bitch. It just came like that.
Speak, and if we need to bleep you, we'll bleep you.
Okay.
Fair?
That's fair. All right. So get up. Mom's on her own. She's doing well. She's selling weed, having a good life, partying, everything's cool. And then something called crack cocaine came.
Around when was this?
About 88, 89. I was born in 80, about 8 or 9.
Okay.
So, you know, first you could afford it. I didn't notice it. Then house got raided. Things happened. A lot of us came back. Her boyfriend robbed her. Went through a whole bunch of things. We started moving a lot. Started getting high.
Were you going to school at this time? Like, what was your life while she was kind of succumbing to addiction?
No, I was definitely, I was going to the beach by myself at 3 or 4 years old.
Okay.
So, like, even when she wasn't strung out, she had instilled in me degrees of responsibility. I was the kid when there was a party going on, all the kids in my room, I leave the room in a dress, and I don't say nothing, I don't mess with those. I was that kid. So I was already set to get into a routine and just go with it. I kind of was like, I could go my way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was a natural alpha, so it kind of just fit. So about 88, 89-ish, can't handle it. start disappearing for, you know, days. Started off 1-2 days, then days turned to weeks.
Did you guys have your own place? Were you by yourself? No.
Staying with various junkies and crackheads and psychopaths. Okay. Yeah. One time we stayed with a Vietnam vet. Charlie, rest of the home, wherever he's at. I get up 3 o'clock in the morning. I think I was 10-year-old kid, getting up 10 o'clock, getting up 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm thirsty, I'm parched.
Yeah.
I'm already in bed with my mama. You know, that's already an uncomfortable situation. I'm growing and stuff, getting big. I'm 6'3". So I go and shoot to the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And all out of nowhere, somebody grabs me and just pulls me down. Viet Cong's coming. I pissed on myself. Like, what? And this was so I had to get used to this.
Yeah.
Like, I had to pick up my room, I gotta do like this. Where Charlie at? Or during the
day.
During the day, I gotta see how much Charlie drank. Oh, this park is fun. So then when Charlie gets out, I do better. Now I get a prostitute heroin addict with her pimp boyfriend that like beat her. Now for me, this is what I do, honest thing. Me and Bobby, that was his name, we used to fight over food because my mom would be gone for like a week or two. So, you know, that mac and cheese is mine, Jack. Don't touch it.
Yeah.
Touch it, I got to touch you. But I didn't have the strength to do that until one night he was beating up Carolyn, which was his prostitute wife, and I grabbed my little shoulder pad because I played football and was hitting him with them jumps. And then he tried to hit me, but then my mom jumped in and got in. And then, you know what I'm saying, I had to go to my room. It sucked in my room.
So you had friends during this time?
People I played sports with. Like I said, I was taught not to let the house out, and everything that happened in the house stay in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But now with hindsight and having I did enter to a friendship that lasted a little while till the guy just turned out to be a rotten apple. But his mom had like, it's weird because his mom had like lived where we lived when I was real young.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, oh snap, the dude that was in my mom's house was her boyfriend. And she had called social services on my mom one time because I used to ride the big wheel all willy-nilly. This is like years before. So years later, the apartment I'm talking about was above hers. Her name was Miss Diane. Her apartment was right here. So I would go down there. And then through the years, like she had cussed me one time. And through the years, but with hindsight, she always was like, she knew the house wasn't right. You know, she's like one of them weak people that like won't speak on that until years later. And then act like they should receive a reward. Like, she's so, we're going to fast forward. This lady ended up, she's the reason why I was in military school. I was doing fairly well. And she sent me the article for the guy that molested me. I know I'm getting ahead of things, but I'm just trying to draw a picture. She sent me the article while I was in, years later. And I was in private school. I was, you know, I was doing something a little different than what I, because I was selling crack at 11. We'll get into that too. But so that's the type of lady she is. You know what I'm saying? She just want to, from a distance, help you out. Like, that's what, leave me alone. If you way over there. But so boom.
That so Charlie's gone. Bobby and Carolyn are there. You finally fought back against Bobby.
Now we got to share a hotel with Bobby and Carolyn and my mom. We get kicked out of there. Then we get kicked out of there because of all the
bullshit
going on, you know. Apartment buildings just don't like people just using drugs and fighting willy-nilly. Like, that's not cool.
Who knew?
Yeah, go figure. Damn apartments. So, go Bobby Carroll. Now, my mom's starting to venture off and get high, and being that we're in a hotel room, sometimes she has to take me with her. And so now I'm starting to meet other kids that parents get high.
Okay.
And we start together, and we start saying, man, we're going to go out here and have fun. They get high, we're going to get fun. But our idea of fun wasn't necessarily like the most healthiest. Like, we used to do things like steal bikes, play knockout kings, you know, a whole bunch of stuff, which led into this spiral of negativity. Got into
Did you ever feel like, I don't know, the system failed you? Like, did you feel like you wanted some help? Were you cool with all of this at that, you know what I mean? When you were that age, like, you knew something was wrong. You knew this shit wasn't normal. You're not telling anybody though. So, or were you cool?
Have no faith in the system. I was taught, you know, my mom was a hippie. So she was anti-government. And at the end of the day, she was the black sheep of her family. And so she was viewed as such. So it was just like that's that energy right there was festering. So my mom, we get up in her part in this where she we get our own hotel room.
Okay.
And one day it's me and I think the kid name was Jody. She pulls me in the bathroom, she says, "Look, I'm about to go off with Johnny for a little bit." She handed me an ounce of reefer. I said, "Look, sell this and you'll be all right." So me and Jody went out. I was like, "Man, how do I sell this?" So I literally like was taking my thumb and that would be $10. You know, like, I'm 11 years old, so my thumb's on this side. You know, I got 11 years old. But my mom was plugged, as it turns out, that I found out later when I was in prison. Her connect was the mob, was a dude in the mafia. So he used to get like exotic like reefers that was from a little bit, not local shit. Like my mom was like, you know, the top, like she had skunk and stuff like that when it wasn't even heard of. People were just like, "Yo, give me a bag of weed." So she had like name brand weed before it was even popular. So she give me that. I sell it to my homeboy mom. Yeah, the hood. You gotta love it. So I sell it to my homeboy mom. And she mad at first because it's little. So we go play basketball. I guess she, you know, liked it. So she come to the basketball court. You know, I'm the only little white guy out there. You know, it's in the hoods, you know, hoodish environment. So then she says, "Hey, little white boy, come here." And she got like three guys with her. My heart going like, damn, I'm like, man, they about to take all my little money. My little... Man, they about to rob me. And I walk up, poke my little chest out, walk up to me. And she's like, "You got some more of that stuff?" I said, "Yeah." Now, the dude that was with her turned out, you know, I find, you know, later in life, he was somebody that was, you know, one of the, you know, not one of the first, but he was among the first wave of young men getting crack money. So, you know, this is like, okay. I'm like 16, but he got like five cars and jewelry and stuff. So he like buy my whole pack. So me and my friends go to the arcade. Come on, y'all. I'm rich. So, you know, that's how it started. And then, you know, meet other friends. And then one of my friends was selling crack. He put me onto it, did that. And
where's your mom during this time? She's still in and out?
Getting high.
It's a lot of years to be getting high.
So that goes on. I go, you know, moving around. Different people try to rescue me. I start to play football. One of my football coaches. He decides to take me in.
Okay. Were you happy to be taken in?
Yeah. But here's the wild thing. Let's back up. Before I started selling crack, when I was 8 or 9, my mom was dropping a ball. We had a hotel room, and I met this kid named Tommy. And we was at the pool playing, doing kids. Tommy was cool. He's from New York. And the guy who brought him there was a guy named Ed. And so everything was cool. He'd take go-karts. Everything was like, damn, this shit cool. Come down here about three or four times, boom, 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 time. Like all summer they was coming down here like once a month, once every 2 months. That was my summer fun. But at the end of the summer, you know, buying me stuff. You know, my mom's getting high. She's going. She's not paying attention. I'm eating literally because of Tommy. Like if it wasn't for Tommy, you know how the fuck I would have ate. Yeah. And Ed got hip to it. So one of the nights, I'm in his sleep, he starts feeling on my penis. I don't know what to do. So I freeze. And then he leaves.
How old were you?
Like 9.
So were you in there with Tommy? Was Tommy in the room with you?
Yeah, Tommy was in it. See, I really think one other time he was here, I think he was touching Tommy in front of me, but I won't hip to what was going on. Mm. He's like family. So I thought like he was just maybe, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know what the fuck was going on. So then he tried me successfully. Then he came back. And it just became a thing where, like, he touched me, he bought me shit. He touched me, he bought me shit. And then it was actually me selling drugs and crack that got me to be like, "Nah, you ain't touch me no more."
Yeah.
And getting into the aggression and the alpha, you know, the toxic can be used for a positive in a fucked up situation. And since I learned that, sometimes, you know, you got to do something worse to kill the worst.
Did you know that it was wrong? Was it just a means to an end to you at that time?
And I was embarrassed by it, and I felt like it wasn't right, but I felt like, yo, I need some shoes. I need some clothes. Like, I get the new shit when he come. I eat.
Yeah. You weren't being provided for.
I get to do shit that everybody else is doing that I wouldn't be getting to do. Like, it was so bad. My football coach went, like, around that time. We had an extra playoff game. I hadn't eaten in a week. So we was playing. We was out there practicing. I was moving slow. I was dry. And my coach was like, he pulled me to the side. He was like, what's up? And I ain't want to say nothing. He's like, no. So then the other coach came. But rest in peace, Buck Johnson. He came up. He was like, what's up? What's wrong with you? I ain't eating a week, Buck. Listen, Johnson. I ain't eating a week, coach. He was like, you ain't a week. Man, get that boy some food. I made the game with the tackle for that game, real talk. On some movie stuff. Like, I really did. But we would have won the game anyway because they cheated because they put older kids on the field. Yeah, you know.
But did – so I feel like there's these little red flags that adults around you saw. You tell your coach you didn't eat in a week. Yeah. They feed you that day. Do they keep feeding you?
We in the 90s, baby. You mind your own business. Jeez. I mean, that's what it was, you know, that was the toxicness of our era.
Yeah.
It's good to mind your own business sometimes, but when you got little kids, you know, doing bad stuff, you know, sometimes you might need to open your eyes. But then again, you know, you got everything going on. Like, I'm just a blip on a big map of trauma. I'm just a blip. Can't everybody catch everything?
Yeah.
That's one thing I know I don't harbor resentment for. I don't resent nobody for catching it. I resent some people for the way they responded from it. You know? I felt like they dropped the ball later because, like, fast forward again, I do this. I'm dyslexic myself. I might talk the end in the beginning to the end.
Okay.
But when I came out with it the first time when I was like 16, 17. But it was still tight for that manipulative energy because I came out with it to not go upstate but to get, like, a lesser facility because I was bored, and I had a young lawyer who was like, look, man, I ain't got nothing to do. What you going back in that cell? What, you want to talk for a minute? Because I used to go in there and be like, yeah, and leave. So, yeah. He's like, man, so he was the first one to crack my shell in a sense, and I guess I was so bored, and he was cool, and I was like, you know, because he was asking me questions. He's a lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did his lawyer thing. He just asked me questions, and then I came with it, and he looked at me. He just started writing. And so I went from having to do like a year and a half, 2 years in Beaumont, to go into a psych facility. I've always been gifted with intelligence. So in the psych facility, I excelled through every program. Like, they had to expedite me out of there because there was nothing else for them. And then it was the first time I received a little bit of counseling about it. My last foster family, my football coach now, when I started getting, because I punched the teacher. I smacked the teacher in the eighth grade. Like, you know, I was wild. Like, one time I shot at somebody and the police came. My mom said he was with me.
Angry all the time? Like, did you know you were angry all the time?
I was pissed off all the time. Then on top of that, after I stopped the molestation, I would have nightmares about it. It'd be my worst days. I'm a lot to get suspended after a nightmare. With hindsight, you know?
Yeah.
Reflect. I did a lot of that in prison. But we'll get to that too. You know, that's how I really got in touch with a lot of things.
How did Ed react when you put a stop to it?
All right. So, as it turns out, I learned from hindsight that I introduced him to a lot of his victims. That's where a lot of my guilt lies. Yeah. Wow. And that man sent me. That was great Diane. And I got kicked out of that school a week later for fighting. Damn. One of them related. So, it was the fact that I introduced him to people, but I had cut him off once I got into the streets. And he would pop up and I would see him, but he wouldn't touch me.
How did you feel when you saw him?
Like, what's up? But he'll always be with one of the kids I introduced him to. So now...
You never thought to, like, say anything? Did you even think, or were you just really focused on survival yourself?
I don't think I thought about it. Because I was so busy trying to bury him.
Yeah.
I don't want that responsibility at 12 years old. Because this shit tearing me apart. I don't even think I knew that for myself. I don't even think I knew it. Awareness wasn't there.
Yeah.
That's
you were a child, so it's okay. Not to be there. You were a child who wasn't taught much by the people who brought you into this world and who were responsible for teaching you.
They put me into experiences. I become an expert experience learner.
Yeah. Not everybody manages to learn from their experiences ever. So there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, I got it right eventually.
It's all right, as long as you get it right. It's not how you start, it's how you finish, right?
Yeah.
And if you get better throughout.
I don't even think it's about how you start or how you finish. I think it's about how they remember you.
Why?
Because look at everything people covet is off a memory of something that impact people made on a whole lot of people. So if they remember you, like I honestly think, and a couple of my people that really talk to me and know me, I'm one of the people that when I put out the stuff I'm writing right now, the stuff I'm working on, now they're going to be going like, yo, they should have listened to him a little bit more.
Did you, as a result with your experiences with Ed, did you become like sexually promiscuous? Or were you out there, you know, or did you just stop messing with anybody, period?
I said that wrong, so just to emphasize my point. I've been having sex since I was that. That happened with somebody we was living with. My mom was living with one of her friends. This is when she was on her decline. And she had, and her friend had a 16-year-old son and an 11-year-old son. I was like 9 or 10. And I was watching the 16-year-old son porno one day. And, this is how I started smoking marijuana, too, because of the same type of situation. I think the marijuana one happened first. So what happened was I got caught messing. Nope, they're all together, jumbled up. So look, they catch me watching the porno.
Okay. You're nine. Like,
yeah, I'm like 9, 10. He's like, you like that? I'm like, it's all right. So, you know, we're all grown. I think I'm like 15. Nine, though. I think I'm 15. Yeah. Turning on 20.
Wow.
So he was like, I bet. So he went and got one of his little jank-janks.
The 16-year-old.
Yeah, she was like 15. And I was like 9, 10. And she kind of like guided me through the process. I guarantee you I was horrible, but it was an introduction.
Well, because the 15-year-old girl thought it was okay to do that.
I don't know what she thought. To this day, I don't know what she could have thought. I'm a pleaser now. I'm a grown-ass man. I'm a pleaser now, so I don't understand. I'm befuddled to this day. I don't know. I mean, she probably went through some trauma. She probably got touched by her uncle or something. Like, this is real life
thing.
We don't try to address, but these are things that happen and impact because a lot of our, which is the center of everything, where everything comes from, is completely damaged by so much trauma of just toxic masculinity, just men thinking they can do what they want, and just it is a sickness. So that energy pushed forward.
Yeah. Generational trauma, generational curses, hurting people, you know, hurt people, hurt people, all of it. All of it. Cycles.
This whirlwind.
Yeah.
It's like the worst hurricane, tornado, tsunami, all that shit in one. And it's emotional. It's inside of you. So you really don't know which way is up, literally. You're just in emotional turmoil at all times. And this subconscious, this memory bank, like we cannot. I've been trying to control thoughts and ideas and shit from popping in my brain for so long. It's just, I've given up. So I found meditation. Thanks to my big friend that you met earlier.
Yeah.
You know, he was telling me for a year, solid. Yo, bro, you need, because I'm one of the people that I'm always having ideas and everything. So that cluttered my mind. Then I got things that's going on. Then I'm a helper. So I got some of my problems on my brain.
Yeah.
And then this going on with me. Then I might trip and do something stupid. So I got that on the brain.
You ever notice the people who experience the most are the biggest helpers?
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to give someone the tools that you didn't have, or you want to help someone in ways that you weren't helped, or make it easier.
It's the traumatized disease.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like I did not like nothing that came with that situation. Like I'm a lot to really help somebody I know that's about to be homeless or something like that. My mom was homeless for years.
Yeah.
Which trusted me, she was homeless for the duration until a little bit later on.
So we're going to summarize because we've said a lot in 20 minutes or so. Mother suffered from addiction for years and years and years. As a result, you did not have a stable home situation. As a result, you were self-parenting, right?
Her brother molested her. So let's defend her a little bit. She had trauma because her brother was the star of the family. He touched on her.
Addiction's a disease though, right? It's a disease. So whatever makes you turn to it, addiction's a disease. So it's not, there's no negative on your mother for falling prey to addiction, especially, you know, in light of that. So this isn't to, you know, slam your mother. Rest her soul. Addiction's a disease. It's not something people choose. You know, you don't actively choose to fall down that. You know, you just, you get stuck in that cycle.
It triggers trauma. That's my theory on addictive personalities. Like, addiction, and it's like everybody has the chemicals in them for it to turn the way it turns, and it's like a trauma and traumatic energy that pushes it that way. Just a theory.
Well, I'll tell you, I was raised by a functioning alcoholic, and so I don't drink a lot, right? So there's, you know, you can fall, you can go one way or the other. You either see the things around you and you fall prey to them because of whatever, right? Or you kind of go sharp, sharp left. But for me, there wasn't an in-between. Just because, you know, and I was raised by someone who, you know, did drugs. And so as a result, never bothered. I never bothered because for me, I felt like from a young age, it was a slippery slope, right? It's a very slippery slope. And I know what happens on the other side of that slope. And I didn't want any parts of that. So I just didn't from a young age to this day, 40 years old. But so your mom is going through what she's going through, which is making you go from home to home with different people. You're having to fend for yourself. You end up getting molested. You end up being out in the streets selling drugs. You have anger issues. You've got nightmares. You've got things that you're repressing and suppressing. And of course, why wouldn't you, right? People kind of see every now and again, will lend a little hand, but then it's just a tiny one and then step back. And so what happens? What happens next? What happens, you know, when you're at your football coach's house, the like later on when you're in high school?
I try to do the school thing. I didn't agree with it. I was already too grown. Mm-hmm. Eventually I went back to selling, you know, drugs to make a little money, because my foster family, you know, they was kind of selfish. I had a white foster mother and black foster father. And I got along with black father and all his family. They loved me. They accepted me. They're from Baltimore, from the slum slums. Like, they was calling me white chocolate out there before white chocolate was playing. You know, like, I literally, my foster father told me, because I kept going back to, you know, unsavory neighborhoods. They lived in a decent neighborhood. He's like, all right, you want to keep going to the hood? I got something for you. Took me to Baltimore. He dropped me off with his nephews and them. Literally, I did not see another cracker for like 50,000 miles. I'm exaggerating. But I looked at another white person for like miles. Didn't see one. Went to the basketball function. I walked around like I was in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I mean, them and everybody embraced me. But it won't know. Didn't nobody treat me like how I seen a black kid come to all white neighborhood in Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It was. Oh, you're such and such family? Oh, come on, man. Let's go play ball. Oh, man, let's go to the coach. Let's go get some quarter waters. Let's go, you know what I'm saying, doing normal kid stuff. Yeah. But when I with the white foster family, it's all about status. Yeah. All about, and then they don't like my foster pops. He's the one who brought me here. So my leader already with him. He brought me here. Family. His mother was the first mother I felt like that was grandma. She died. I know her 2 years. She died. I cried like I knew her forever. Yeah. Like, Miss Mickey treated me like I was her grandson. Like, didn't called every, didn't miss a beat. Like she known me my whole life. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So running around, just doing, I mean, you name it, stealing cars, selling drugs, shooting at people.
All while you're staying in your foster father's home?
Yep. Started to run them up. You know, I get locked up, going to detention homes, getting kicked out of schools. And so that goes on to 18. They cut loose from me. Yeah. You know, 18.
Did you get worse, or did you just stay the same level of where you were at in terms of what you were doing?
Just make a little more money. Yeah. Still irresponsible. Still my temper, anger issues.
How could you not be angry?
Man, listen, I've done some things out of anger that I'm completely ashamed of. And I apologize. Anybody see that I've done something to me, I apologize, y'all. I was hurt.
Yeah, I forget you live where you ran amok. You're still there.
Yeah, I'm still, hey. I guess. But yes, I ran amok for a while, selling drugs, doing this, ups and downs. You know, there's times when I was 18, I made like $70,000. That was like real big. And like 18 years old, and I thought, what? Yeah. I'm rich, bitch.
You know, I felt. Were you still having nightmares? Did the nightmare stop?
Nightmare still ain't stopped. They're less frequent. They're less frequent. Depends on how calm my mind is and what it, they normally reoccur when I'm stressed.
Yeah.
That's one thing I've noticed.
Did you ever talk to anyone about it?
Myself. Like, you know, so we'll get to that. Let's go to that then. So let's rush through because I don't want to glorify nothing I've done. So long story short, I'm face deep in the streets, 21. I get set up by a girlfriend to get robbed. I kill one of the individuals robbing me. Okay, go buy a dog, go to jail. I got a good plea. Associate of mine hops on my case. My plea goes up. Sit down with my lawyer. My lawyer says, look, I need you to part your hair, talk proper, and dress like a white guy that you are. And I think we can fight this. And you might get time for a gun. Because their whole story was flawed. The physical evidence was, because my lawyer first told me, when I told him what happened, because that's my lawyer, what happened, I'm supposed to.
Was your lawyer black or white?
White, old white man. Okay. So I tell him everything that happens. He goes, looks at the physical evidence, he looks at their statements. He was like, well, look, your statement matches the physical evidence, pretty much the T.
Okay.
Their statement is so far-fetched from the physical evidence that it's blatant in their lying. Because their story was, I killed him over the female. So,
okay.
Yeah, so go through that. I get locked up.
Did you part your hair and dress proper?
Nope, I took a plea.
Really? Did you really?
I'm from the streets. They offered me 13 and a half year plea with 33 years suspended, supposedly, but it turned out to be indefinite over my head. And I sat back, thought about it. It took me about 4 hours to accept the plea. Thought about it. I was like, you know what? I'll be home in my 30s. I know a lot of people that's never coming home for this same shit. And matter of fact, I know people that's never coming home because they got caught with a substance
yeah.
and somebody be worthy yep. of somebody's life, one way or yep. the other.
Yep.
So the way, and I'm from the streets, I'm from that cloth, so I rationalize it to where, you know what? Nothing. I'll do it. I signed the plea, went and did my bid.
What was that like?
Ooh. I think
people who say, you know, oh, you know, I did my bid, like, it's not, what was that like?
Man, that's the most fun you'll never have in your life. No, it's.
You use humor as levity a lot.
Yes, I do. They treat you like you're not human. They're trained for that. So just yep. imagine being around a bunch of the same sex, so the same testosterone, energies and everything, and they're defining you as not being human.
Yeah.
So that's how you exist, as not being human, or you do whatever you can to grab any piece of humanity that you can. Mm-hmm. Books, outside world, telephone,
mm-hmm.
TV, you know, yourself, car gangs, people running around working out, like this piece yeah. of humanity or human actions that they grab to accept as their humanity. And the thing mm-hmm. that happens, you get stuck in a time warp. Like, I come home, I was going from 21 to 34. When I come home, I'm thinking like I'm 21 on a maturity level. Like, I'm literally like, first, like, I always measure okay. my first females I'm trying to talk to are like 21, 22, 23, just off an instinct. Not even like trying to be like, oh, she a young thing. Like, I'm just like, I'm still young. Mm-hmm. When I got out, started, like, my ex-wife, she told me that, you know, I was real childish. And she, yeah, like, I'm childish now. I'm still childish. But, like, and then I felt uncomfortable in like big spaces. It was just a spectrum.
Was it hard to survive?
I mean, I did 8 years with no contact to the street. I had to live off prison. It is decisions you got to make. It all depends on how you're made.
Yeah.
I've seen schools literally sell their body parts so they can eat something.
Yeah.
Other than the state food. I've seen people sell their body parts because they lost gambling. I've seen people take their mind and their body and turn it into such a sharp form of steel that I admire that man to this day.
Mm-hmm.
No matter that, he never coming home. I've met, it's just, it's humanity bottled up in a bottle.
Yeah.
And that's
so how what I did you it. So which were you?
I became, well, I was dealing with Islam before I went to prison.
Okay.
So when I got in, I started to gravitate more to the Muslim brothers, and then I ended up taking my Shahada. And then I was doing that for a while, and then I started to feel uneasy with certain things that came with that. So I started pulling back. I still dealt with the brothers, but I from the street that was locked up too, because you know I was going to detention homes since I was young. So it's a fraternity.
Yeah.
There's somebody somewhere that knows you from somewhere if you've been going places.
Yeah.
So I adapted. I tried to change me because I knew I understood at the beginning of the bid that if I stayed the same, I wasn't coming home.
Yeah.
Like I really was quick. I'll end your life. Like that was my mentality. Like you come playing, it's going to be violence. You know what I'm saying?
But what had shown you that that wasn't the way? You know what I mean?
Boss. He gave me the speech in the jail. He said, look, the way you are, you're either going to come home or not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's like, don't not come home. And so
Don't come home.
Early in the bid,
yeah.
Hey, you not no sucker. You not soft. Yeah. You don't have to prove nothing. Because that's been my biggest problem, you know, being Caucasian in the hood. Mm-hmm. And being, I got to prove I'm a man, and I got to prove that I'm not a sucker-ass white man.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I used to get punched in my face in, like, the third, fourth grade for just fighting. And then I put my trapper keeper to work. I mean, that's just, yeah, I had a trapper keeper.
Yeah, we all did.
I just was like, I was telling myself on the bus, I said, man, I'm going to hit somebody with this. I'm going to hit somebody with this. I got off the bus. I said, But they stopped punching me in my face.
Yeah.
But, it's just, you got to go in there with the mentality of can't trap my mind. You can trap my body, but you can't trap my mind.
Yeah.
It's really got to have
everyone should have that thought period, regardless of what situation they're in, right? Don't allow your mind to be trapped.
Or barrier, yeah, trapped, boxed in. Yeah, yeah.
So you did the bid. You come out
honorably. I didn't snitch. Didn't do nothing outside of my sexual character that I chose, which I love women. You know, that's just me. Not throwing no salt on nobody who did them things. You know, people do what they do. I'm not a judging type person. I didn't come out a manipulator. That was something I focused on. I did a lot of time in isolation because I used to butt heads with COs and police a lot. Mm. You know, not literally butt heads. I wasn't like, No, I'm not animal. I'm not Vin Rames or nothing. I won't run into the prison. Police, man. But, you know, they try to carry me like I'm going to respond a certain way and I'm going to stick my chest out. I'm not going to let them. Just because you can put me in the hole don't mean I'm scared of that hole. Put me there. But you're not going to do this. You're not going to carry me this way right here, no matter what the repercussions are. And that's something prison instills in you, too, if you're that tight.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why home we're so aggressive, because we got to stand firm for it. If we don't stand firm, you'll get
throughout any of this, at any point, you know, there are people that give up for less, right? Throughout any of this, from the time when you were a kid up till, you know, the time where you were doing your bid, did you ever just feel like, F it? You know what I mean? Did you ever just, or were you always, like, were you actively pushing forward towards something? Were you just taking each day as it came? Like, what was your mindset?
This is something I kind of thought about would come up. Since I started meditating and going to a different place, I really haven't thought about it. I still think about it, but not like I did. But I was the type of person, I think about suicide 6-7 times a day. Tried it 3 times in my life, 4. Never worked out the way I planned it, and it just gave up. So I ain't good at this shit, so I'm not going to try. So I thought about it a lot, you know, I'm a Tupac X thinker, you know. I think in my thought process, like, you know, I'm not scared of death, but I'm scared of dying. I want to die honorably. Like, I would go save the kids in the burning building and die in there and be good because I saved the kids. Type.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how, but I don't, if you tell me, don't run there, you might die, I'll be like, the kids need saved. Fuck dying.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, awkward silence.
Just thinking. So you're out.
I'm out.
Are you back into the old life at all, or did you start making a difference immediately?
I'm pretty proud of bank my second week out. I felt so socially awkward when nobody talked to me. I'm running around in a sweatsuit. I'm a fly young guy. I ain't looking fly today because I was doing a lot before the show. But normally, people look at me like, okay, he can dress real. Yeah. I got my own sometimes. It was like I was feeling socially awkward. I wasn't feeling accepted. So I called my homeboy. I was like, man, I'm about to go around banking something and go back, man. I can't take it out here. I'm going back home. He was like, man, you can't talk like that. Whoa. So he was like, look, man, my girl gonna put you just need some pussy. That's basically, you know what I'm saying? You just need some coochie. So I was like, you know, okay. It has been 12 and a half years, you know. 12 and a half years, no say, you know, it doesn't sound like a bad idea, pal. So, you know, girl comes with the phone, comes with the pictures. Oh, no. No. Oh, okay, she's all right.
Oh, goodness.
Pause her, go on a date. We get married 8 months later. We just separated January 24th. I walked away from the marriage out of selfish reasons because I couldn't hold up to my obligations no more. But I think that's because I made that decision. I didn't come home. This is why I want to advise everybody that's going through trauma. Mm-hmm. Any man that's coming home from prison, any man that just wants to get into it with a woman, I don't care what your struggle is in life, make sure you're stable and solid with who you are and your family first before you start seeking these women.
Preach it.
What you're going to do is you're going to end up with a woman like my ex-wife that's borderline, can't, she loves me, but she hates me because I hurt her bad. Because I wasn't ready for it, because at the end of the day, it just didn't go right. Because I ended up going, like, I did 3 years trying to come into society, but they wanted to put me in a construction field.
Yeah.
They kept wanting to put me places I don't want to be.
Yeah.
So I was doing HVAC. I felt comfortable there. I was like, all right, I'll compromise.
Okay.
I couldn't get no hands-on training. I was going to school. I got almost all the certifications. I was at the end of the class. I was getting my associate's degree, and I was getting my certification. So when no company give me out, because nobody would insure me because of the murder charge. So I took my tax money to Denver.
Okay.
And we'll not talk about that yet.
No, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about all that. But I went back to what I knew best. And that was a roller coaster ride in itself.
But did you have, having had your experience before, did you have a healthy sense of caution, right, going back into that world? Like, were you more careful? Were you less angry?
Well, I had made my mom a promise that saved me. I promised my mom that I would never get into the cocaine game again.
Okay.
So I changed games.
Okay.
And I did it. Not just out of, it wasn't just the selfish thought of going, yo, I'm going back to the streets to get some money.
Yeah.
Looked at it. When I got to Denver, I had some conversations, you know, it was legal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I seen it. I said, man, this is going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I was like, all right, this is the road I'm going down. Now, I know this is right now, it's dangerous, and it's going to cost me my freedom, which possibly will June 14th. But I was like, there's an end game here, though, that's bigger than any that a lot of people are paying attention to. Yeah. This is an agricultural.com. Hold on, I'm going to say that again. Let me drink some Gatorade first. Hold on.
Gatorade plug.
Yeah. This was the agricultural.com. It's coming. There's so many ways. When this turns, after these greedy crackers learn how to get their money from this, then we're going, but if you're ahead of, knowledge is power. Go back to what we was talking about before the show. If you know a trade in and out and you're good at it, you know how to get money from this trade and this resource, whether it's a trade or a resource, you can be successful. And that's how humanity has been from the dawn of time.
Yeah.
So I went into that with that mind frame. And now I'm positioned in a CBD store. And, you know, I was able to transition and prepare for everything that's come to floodgates opening. So I did learn And I did come with caution, but my mom held me. I mean, I hold to my promises. I don't have no tattoos. Who goes to prison not to get no tattoo? Like, that's a rite of passage. I didn't get none in prison. Mom was like, yo, I don't get no jailhouse tattoos. Who promised me? I'm like, all right,
did your mother ever get clean for a period of time?
Yes, she did.
Okay. How did that happen, or how long was she clean for?
All right. So I'm running the streets. How'd you ask that question? Story time. I catch a case, I lose money. I beat the case though.
Okay.
I decide, I got back with my real mom because I had to choose in court when I was 12, my mom or my foster family. And then when I chose, my mom went, she was homeless. And then, this is like some miracle story shit. Then she finally broke the barriers and talked to my foster family. They let me see her when I was 15. And that night, her and her boyfriend had sex and she had my little sister. She got pregnant that night. Was so happy, and she was probably out of late too. I mean, come on, ain't all of it. But it was just the stars aligned properly.
Yeah.
The moon was aligned. My little sister came from that, which ended up, fast forward, I'm with another girl, 19. I'm 19, 20. I'm with this chick. She's going to see her cousin in Hampton. We're in North. Me and her live together in Norfolk. She's in Walmart. She looks at my mom, complete stranger to her at the time. True story. Mm. She was like, I was like, my boyfriend. And my mom said, your boyfriend's name. She said, my government name.
Yeah.
Girl was like, oh my God. This is before a cell phone. Well, no, cell phones were here. I had one. But so she shot, came back, was like, yo, woo, 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 woo. So she got the address. I called, went out there. I met my mom and I met my little sister.
Okay.
So then I was like, man, I don't want her to come out. Well, mom was getting high out there. She was staying in downtown Newport News in the projects. She was getting high. And that's what I did. That then me and her, she kicked me out because she knew I was about to take my little sister. And it was a whole little thing. I chased one of her boyfriends around projects with a knife. He claims I was trying to stab him. I just wanted to let him feel how sharp it was. You know, just a little test. So, you know, we fight, we disconnect. I go out of town. I end up bumping into some money again. Then I end up catching the case, losing the case. She's clean. We end up talking. I go out. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go live with my mom, my little sister, and I'm going to try this. Let's try this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out there for about a month, month and a half, maybe two. And my mom smokes up all the rent money on the rim.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to all the guys out there that sell crack. And we smoke weed together. We chill. We're all cordial and everything. So I went. I took the last bit of money she had because I ain't had no money. All I had was marijuana and food.
Yeah.
So I took her money, went to one of the guys, said, man, let me get double up. He doubled me up. I got back into the game, got kind of successful. I'm not trying to glorify nothing, you know, a little bit of success, not nothing major, but I was making more money than the average. And end up meeting the girl who set me up, get up, then I go in prison and everything. So she was clean. After I started getting back in the game, she got clean again. I made her get clean.
Okay.
I sold my mom crack. Yeah. I sold my mom crack to get her clean. That's the only way I could get a bank card. And I was on the block, like, you know, when you're in business, you know how to do things, you always make sure you got the best.
Yeah.
That was my. I knew people in other cities that had other products that was in the city. I would go out of that and get them products and bring them to the city. They would be better than other products. So certain, you know, fiends would get like it. So one of the fiends, he knew my mom, so he thought it was cool to get her to start smoking because he figured he could get access to me better.
Yeah.
I had to introduce him to a butt of a pistol to see how hard it was. It's over time. Yeah. The time is
11. No.
Oh,
but she,
when that happened, so when that happened,
yeah,
how she's blowing my phone up. She's throwing all my stuff outside. I'm already good anyway. I'm living, you know, I'm all right. So, she calls me. She was like, it was something my little sister needed.
Okay.
Two, that I'm coming. So when I come, she locks me in the room. She's screaming on me. Then she breaks down crying. And she was like, goddamn, just sell me some. Like, no. She was like, look, if I give you the bank card, will you just give me a 50? And I never took the 50. But I was like, all right. Gave her the crack, took the bank card. She went cold turkey. She cussed me out for like 3 weeks, and eventually she started to come back to herself, and then she was clean all the way until I caught my case. Yeah, again. So yeah, I've been around her when she was clean. You know, but you know.
And she's no longer with us, correct?
Yeah, she left my second month home from prison, 12 and a half years. And I didn't see her for the first month. So I only seen my mom for like maybe 4 weeks.
Was she clean at any point throughout the time when you were locked up?
At the end, when I came home, she was clean. She was doing exactly what she's supposed to be doing the whole time, smoking marijuana.
Your sister, how is she?
She ignored me for a long time. She came back into my life when she needed some financial help. I helped her, and she only calls me when she needs stuff, which I'm perfectly fine for, you know, because I dropped the ball. I supposed to have been there. And she's, you know, my mom was homeless with her. She ended up going with her dad. People, you know, she had her fair share of trauma. We don't even have a bond, which hurt. It hurt me a lot at first, but as I started just to accept life more, I just balls in her court. So it's not, no, that's still my baby, but you know, there's no relationship there. Wish there was. We're totally opposite too. Like, she likes white people, I don't. Like, it's just, and daddy's black. That's the thing. My father's Native American, Irish. Her daddy black, and she likes white people, I don't. Well, I like some of them. I love myself though.
Good. You should.
Absolutely.
Do you think that you've healed?
No. I'm healing.
You're healing.
Definitely in the process of healing.
When did that start, do you think?
It's been done in phases.
Okay.
Been done in phases. It really started probably when I first talked about it to that lawyer. Okay. And I had counseling I went through in that psychiatric facility was pretty good. After that, you know, buried it with toxic masculinity, money and women, forget trauma, which is just money and women, you know, and stuff, you know, got in prison, got in the hole, you know, when you're in the hole, you get tired of thinking about the same old thing. So when I started exploring myself and things that was going on, I got into writing. I started writing, like, you know, books of my life, books about this, books to do. And then it was through that I started to do reflection. And then I also tried to, you know, I told myself I was lucky. I was coming home in 12 years for a murder charge. Not a lot of people can do that. So I got a second chance. So I'm going to go out there and make the best of it. You know, I came home with the mentality I'm going to be doing all this. Like, that little list they put out of companies that hire felons is one of the most bullshit lists ever. You can have with something petty. And they'll be like, okay, we'll accept him. But if you got one of them serious janks, insurance company not messing with you. Forget them. They'll say they hire a felon. But if that HR and that security company be like, no, we can't insure that, they're not going. That's how it go down. So it's not even on the company. It's on the insurance. But that's the list they need to put out. Put out the insurance that insure people that got serious felonies. That's the list I want to see.
And in reality, when you do things as a child, or you do things as a young man who is coming from circumstances that are the furthest thing from ideal that you can imagine. And like I said at the beginning, when choices, you're everything's reactionary, right? You didn't have any nurture, everything's reactionary. Like, this is happening, this is what's going on, and so this is what I have to do. And then you get penalized for that later on in life, right?
Or immediately.
And you come out. And there's nowhere for you to go and there's nothing for you to do. But then they're talking about you need to be rehabilitated and this is how you end up, you know, back locked up again. But what is there for people who actually want to come out and have a real second chance?
There's programs for people that are willing to be at the bottom of society if you want to accept that. I know, but it's a lot of options. I'm not going to sit and say, like, everybody throws you to the wolves. Maybe if I would have kept going, I probably would have found something. I just want built to keep going. I know people that come home. This is the key. You got to have a niche. See, I don't have a niche. Trade, a passion. My passion is healing now. But, like, I have a friend named Skip. Shout out to Skip if you watch this. He came home. He liked to cook.
Okay.
With a food truck. Now he got a franchise.
Yeah.
He's a franchise. He's Just got one in D.C. He did like two locally, one in Atlanta and one in D.C. or one in North Carolina. It's his business, not mine. But moral of the story is, yeah, he got pushy because he had a niche. That's been my fault. I ain't had a niche. And there's no programs for maturity. Mm-hmm. And for they come mm-hmm. home and give you all for a change. I don't need to think for a change.
Yeah.
No, I needed for this years I was locked up for you to treat me like a human so I can mature in the scope and learn off my experiences instead of you just treating me like an animal that's caged away because I'm such a threat to society because of one mistake I made that you made one similar, but you just didn't get caught.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff to it. But coming home, they don't address, I think the biggest thing that's not addressed is the maturity level of convicts because we're frozen. It's like demolition. We're on ice. My mind hasn't been able to, like, just imagine, 01 to 14. I miss social media. Camera phones came out while I was about to take my plea. I'm hearing about phones on the street. Everybody geeked, oh, I'm taking pictures on the phone. I'm like, damn, I'm missing that. Come home, man. This stopped me back then. Like, you would have came to me when I called my bitch, like, yo, you could be talking like this, that, and other. I'm like, oh, this Star Trek.
Have you reconciled yourself with the things that you had to do to survive?
Yeah. Except for one. And it's a shame that I feel like, man, he died before I got to kill him. I don't know how I got to get past that. It's a hindrance because it's there. It's real. I'm not going to sidestep it. Like, I don't know how to completely heal from that. It's like a piece of me was torn away and never given back to me.
Absolutely true.
And I'm not going to excuse a lot of my decision making on it. I'm just saying I like to make decisions without it being there. I won't be afforded that right. Nobody has been through stuff like that will be afforded that right.
Yeah.
We just got to wear it and learn how to wear it. Nobody's there to tell you how to wear it. You got too many people in counseling fields that just learn from books. You don't have enough people like that really got that experience, that felt that tug in the stomach, that feels them ghosts hovering when there's no reason for the ghost to be hovering.
You have.
It's deeper than rap.
You have.
Yeah, you know, you got to be able to address it. If you don't learn how to address it, you're going to address it improperly. Then you're going to learn through process of elimination on how to address it because the energy's there.
Yeah.
The energy. Everything's the energy. Everything.
I feel like the way that you frame it anyway, and this could just be, you know, how you have levity and insert humor to talk about things that are horrific, frankly, right, that you experienced. I feel like there's a sort of acceptance as you're recounting these things that you went through, that it was, you were never looking for anybody to save you. You were never, you know, running to tell anybody anything. You were never, it's kind of like, it sounds to me as if you just made the best of whatever variation of hellish shit was going on. You know what I mean? And is that where you were?
I'm addicted to that. I will fuck up a stable situation because I'm addicted to making the best out of any situation. I will implode. That's classic me. You know, I've learned to implode less. I'm trying, and
how?
That's why I made stopping. Meditating has really been a lot of help for me since I started doing it. Before then, I don't know, man. I just go through it until it stopped hurting. Just keep pushing every day until it stopped hurting. That's a terrible way to live, but that's the cycle I was in. It wasn't until I started meditating and grabbing peace of mind for myself. Like, the action of grabbing my own space, my own peace for me, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's clearing my mind a little bit for the space for all the other BS so I can address it properly.
Okay.
It's like a room. If you got all these boxes cluttered up, all just pushed in there, all cluttered up, you're going to be going through the room like, man, where's this? But if you take your time and stack and get all, you know, all the little boxes with the little boxes, big, you know, stack here and then get it. Then you go to the room, you can see, you feel your mind's the same way.
How long have you, that's a great analogy. How long have you been meditating?
Since April 20th.
Seriously?
April 21st. Yeah. Man. Look. See,
what did you do before then? This is real talk, you know, for people who are in this.
Push through. and just accept consequences for sabotaging situations. This is what it was. You know, it wasn't until I started clearing that, because it's cluttered in there. So what do you do when you go in a cluttered room, you're looking for something you can't find, you start pushing things. Get up, kick the thing. It's the same thing with your mind. It's just your subconscious doing it, not you. See, once I started learning about the subconscious, that helped me out too, though. Learning about the subconscious, about how like it thought about me saying this before I even said it.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? I didn't think about saying it. I thought about saying it. It's baffling, but it's happening.
Learning to be mindful and redirect those thoughts.
Now, if certain books and texts that people covet had this information in it, I might believe it more.
Yeah.
It might be more, you know, acceptable. Me personally, like, this is the things we need to be trained in. These are the schools of thought that need to happen.
Yeah.
This is how we need to start moving. Because if we can unlock all of that, then we can make life easier. But, you know, people can't get rich off of that. Why do it?
We're not in the 90s anymore. People aren't minding their business quite as much. They put a camera phone up to everything, and whether they choose to help or not is another situation. But if there are people who are in similar circumstances, what would you suggest they do? What advice do you have, if any?
In my circumstance right now?
Yeah.
Ooh.
They're going through what you went through 20, 30 years ago now.
They're going through what I went through 20. All right. Talk about it ASAP. Find somebody you trust that's going to hug you.
What if you don't trust anybody? What do you mean?
Trust nobody.
Yeah.
You don't trust nobody now. Find a passion and engulf yourself in it. And deal with it in increments that you can if you don't trust nobody. And that's the hard way to do it. But that would be your best option. Like, you got to deal with it, dude. You write it down, talk about it, talk to yourself about it, work through it in your brain, even if it hurts. Like, it sucks. I'm a whole heterosexual male. I'm actually like a borderline sex icon where I'm from. No, I'm just playing. But, no, I'm a cute, I'm a handsome man. So, like, that messes with me that I let a man touch my penis. It pisses me off on the inside. No matter how old I was, it happened. It's just like when you do something, you say something to somebody, you know what I mean? You still got to live with it. It still happened. You still said it. So, like, yeah, just you talking about it, you know, getting acceptance, accepting of yourself, getting understanding. And then when people, and that's why I say it, express with people you love and trust, because they're not going to make you feel messed up about it. And you need that. You need people to be with you to say, man, his eye is fucked up. Yeah, but yo, you still you. And I like you because I didn't know none of this about you, but I like you. You my dog. You my friend. So that don't mean that's something.
Sometimes people isolate though. Yeah. Like when they're going through something like that, they'll isolate because you're ashamed or you're, you know, and so even the people that are your friends, like,
worst thing you can do though, but it is what we do. I did it. I know there's people doing it right now.
Say go to the school principal, the school counselor, find a, you know, start going to outside people?
I don't know. They don't even like their job most of the time. So why are you gonna trust them with your trauma? Authority figures in certain positions just don't deserve it, and they carry it like they do deserve it. It's just, we don't have nobody in responsibility. What I was going, I don't know what's going on in schools now, but like two things. We don't have nobody that can understand the kids in school, which is scary.
Okay.
And we don't have preventive programs for women that go through things. All we got is survivor homes and have programs set up. We don't have preventive programs.
Yeah.
We don't educate young men on how to treat women.
Got a lot of great ideas, Latif.
I've been told that once or twice. I'm working on it.
You've got ways that you can help, sir.
Yeah, I just need to, you know, just network. Everything's networking. Meeting people, getting your story out. Because eventually it all comes down to the guy like me and the guy with the big bag that don't care about the big bag. Then we can get busy. Because at the end of the day, you need a bag to work. There's no work out here without a bag. It just doesn't work that way. Unfortunately.
So you're a helper to those that you know and that you care about. Are there other ways that you give back or that you aspire to give back?
Man, I want to work with kids, but I can't because of my record.
Mm.
And programs out here that's big enough to where they can be like, yo, he's working here. You know, Like if Pharrell, somebody said, yeah, he working here, then I probably have me a dope child program. But people like that don't look that deep. They just do the surface type charity.
So there's a movement called the father figure movement. And I'm going to tell you about it when it ends. But,
I ain't got no kids though.
You don't have to be. You don't have to be. Mentor, coach, passionate about, uncle, brother, kind of like a big brother situation, right? And they don't have any of those stipulations, and it's Black owned and operated. So power to my people. So I'll connect you after. What are you the most proud of?
Me? The most you. Proud of?
What are you the most proud of?
That I ain't a fucked up person. Yeah. I can be sometimes. I'm petty. I'm more petty than 50 Cent. But I'm petty. I'm super petty. But I'm not a bad person. You know, I do have a-hole tendencies. But at the end of the day, man, I'm that guy that's going to stop everything you're doing when you need him. I don't even got to talk to you all the time. We can talk once a month. If we friends, you call me, you in some, or you about to be in some, I'm there. Like, my ex-wife used to say I was a better friend than husband. That was one of the reasons why I had to get away from the marriage, because I was like, I'm not going to change that. I can't change that. One of my lifelines. You know?
Because one of the things, you didn't have that lifeline.
Yeah, I didn't have that lifeline.
So now you are that lifeline.
I try to be. Need to get a bigger bag. Be a better lifeline. I'm serious, man. People that do charity work, that talk, oh, we don't need money stuff, man. Fool yourself, Jack. The same way money mess up, the same way money can fix it.
Your darkest time, and I don't know what that was. I don't know what your darkest time was, right? But your darkest time. What would have shined a light for you?
Money? No, I'm just not. No. No, but it might have. Could send my mom to rehab.
You made a lot of money throughout the years. So.
Yeah, no. All right. Darkest time.
Darkest time.
From like, it's like I have a plethora. Like I have an ensemble of dark times. Like they're all. I know. It's kind of like, which one do I choose from? Like I went through a dark space before, like April. Like since I got separated from my wife, I went through a real dark space because, boom, oh, I think I got it. It's not it's the accumulation of dark times that mess with me, because I feel like I'm an ultimate loser. Because I just feel like I've never completed nothing of significance. I didn't get to kill my predator. I didn't get my mom to see me not be in jail. I didn't get to come home and work these jobs and start my own business because I got in my own way. And it's like, I don't look at what I didn't do. I don't look at what I do. But when I do for other people, that's the only time I can acknowledge what I'm doing.
Yeah,
it's weird, but it's a reality. Dark time. I don't know. It's like, all my dark times just accumulate together. It's like they all just, like, man, they blurred. I don't have, like, just one.
Yeah. So it sounds to me, though, what would have shined a light, and you can tell me if I'm wrong because this is your journey and your experience, but it sounds like throughout all of the varying dark times you had, if somebody had just been there consistently.
Consistently, yeah.
Consistently. One individual, you know, preferably to kind of, like, interfere and guide. You didn't have guidance ever.
No. I didn't.
You guided yourself.
Yeah, right to a brick wall.
But that's what happens when you guide yourself since a child.
I think to have somebody that come into my life and guide me with the intentions of guiding me for the best interests of me instead of how they see me fit. I mean, I'm definitely not your typical white guy. I've been like this for a long time. Like literally sixth grade. It was going to kick me out because I had my pants turned backwards. I had the crisscross braids. And my mom, they just called my mom to school thinking that she was going to co-sign the bullshit. And it was like, well, look, if he don't take them braids out, if he don't turn his clothes around, we're kicking him out for the rest of school.
That's what they were doing in Virginia Beach. We were allowed to wear that in New York. I don't know.
Cook Elementary. I'm going to put them out there. Cook Elementary.
Yeah. I went to school with backwards clothes.
Yeah. Sixth grade. I was one of them super. My mom came in, looked at the principal. looked at me, said, "Do you want to take that out your hair?" I said, "No." So I was like, "All right, mail his report card. Come on." And I went to the beach that day, totally crossed out, and I wasn't looking to be back.
When did you start making better choices that you know consistently?
Last week.
Think about it. Was it in 2014? Was it 2 years ago? Was it, when did you consistently start trying and attempting to make better choices?
Last month. like my people's just shaking their head. Like I really didn't give an F until I started meditating and I've been making better decisions. Like that, I've made better decisions predicated on my circle. Like you said, I'm in the environment, so I'm intelligent. So what I'll do is I make a smart reactionary decision. Mm. That's why I know the importance of preventive measures. Because I'm always making my best decisions on my feet, freestyling.
Yeah.
If I sit down, it's hard for me to, like, sitting still this long talking to you without me feeling. Like, I ain't even smoke a whole black of mine. I definitely, you know, like, that's an accomplishment, but it's for a purpose right now. See, you give me a purpose, and you give me a motivation and cause, I'm a martyr. I got the heart of a martyr. I'm gone. It's just, what purpose is there out here? You walk out here, everybody's disrespectful, everybody's rude, everybody's selfish. Then when you find somebody that ain't, they don't trust you because you might be selfish in the method too.
I think you have multiple purposes that you spoke of preventive measures and programs and ways to help. I think that the purposes are brimming within you, right? I think that they're there, and now you just have to manifest them, and maybe you have to leave your environment, but that's something for you to decide.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I have a trial coming June 14th. Well, I said I just started making good decisions. and it's for...
Do you think it's ever too late?
It's never too late. It's only too late when you're gone and you're remembered for being a certain way you didn't want to be. That goes back to what I was saying. It doesn't matter how you start, finish, how you remember.
Do you think that how people remember you is ultimately your legacy and not what you put out for yourself?
It's definitely ultimately your legacy, for better or for worse. Because just look at the people before us that we know their names, that we not even old. Our grandparents didn't even smell the age close to them. And then we find out through more time, the stuff that we thought was true ain't true. So definitely, unfortunately, not even a doubt, that's an unfortunate. But maybe with technology, we'll be able to hold the truth like with this. Can't nobody debate the truth of this, of me talking like this. Which this. You see me right now, you see how I'm talking, you feel my energy, you feel my body language, you see how I'm acting, how I'm talking. And so you can kind of see, oh, okay, yeah, I can see him saying that, or I can see him doing that because you got to see me.
Yeah.
I didn't see certain people in history's mannerisms, so I don't know if they was capable of doing some of the things that it was done.
Yeah.
I think that's key. But for the most part, yeah, unfortunately, it's the one people put on you that they remember you by more than what you actually do. Sad. But with this type of stuff, more books and stuff, maybe, you know, we can get it, you know, because we're just starting to understand Tesla. People like that. Because you got to realize we have entities that hide things. But now we're in the information age. The cloaks are being dropped. Things about to get real scary. Because a lot of past traditional truths are about proven extremely false. No matter how much people try to quote and unquote, the reality that humanity is humanity is not going to escape. And we can see.
We need an awakening, though. We need an awakening. And this is what needs to happen in order to have the awakening. And so it is what it will be. Thank you for taking the time to share your story today.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. So as my Broken Open watchers and listeners know, I like to end with something called what I know to be true. And what I know to be true is that children should be protected, and that toxicity and trauma that occurs in childhood tends to stay with you forever, and you can heal through it sometimes. You can work through it. But not everyone has that opportunity, and that every child deserves a safe space, and that every adult deserves a safe space. And so, you know, a lot of Latif's story could have been different had people stepped in a real and sustainable way instead of turning ahead, or as he mentioned, you know, just kind of giving the help that they thought that he needed with an end of what they wanted him to be versus what was actually in his best interest. And I also know, and I'm a full believer in, you can always make better choices, and therefore it's never too late. And so no matter what you do or have done, forgiving yourself is often the hardest thing to do. It's harder to forgive yourself for what you've done or what you've allowed to happen sometimes than it is to forgive someone else for an infraction that they committed to you, because how could you hurt yourself like that, right? Like, how could you do something that would cause such detriment to yourself? But you can forgive yourself. You can work on healing yourself, and you can make a better choice to do something differently. And really, it's just about stringing those days together, right? They say 21 days makes a habit, whether it be gratitude, whether it be whatever, something that you've always said yes to, say no, something you've always said no to, say yes. Get yourself out of the environment. Do whatever it takes, because if you get your mind right and you create the space through meditation or silence, I've always loved a dark, quiet room, even before I knew what meditation was. Then it gives you the space to think about making better choices. And if not, make sure you have accountability partners. A friend isn't a friend if they won't tell you the truth when the truth hurts, right? So if you have people around you that are always yesing you, then those people don't really care about you, because they're telling you yes all the time. And sometimes we need to be checked. Sometimes we need to be told no, and that helps keep us accountable and helps us make better choices as well. I'm Tawana Nishi. This was Latif Akins sharing his story. We wish him well. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Latif. This was Broken Open. Have a good night.